Mary was still in her 50s, working full-time and enjoying her big family. She had 5 siblings, 4 children, 2 stepchildren, a grandchild, nieces, nephews, and a loving spouse. She adored her pets and the students at the local college where she worked. She was active in her church and community. And late last week, Mary died of coronavirus. She's one of the 602,000 confirmed COVID-19 deaths in the U.S. as of this week. 602,000. Just pause. Don't rush past the number. Even though it's almost too much to fully comprehend or to emotionally bear, it's important to remember that each person we have lost to this disease is indeed a person, with joys and irritations, talents and faults, a person who, like Mary, will be missed. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry, in for Tanzina Vega, and we begin with this sobering reminder that even as we dip our toes tentatively back into normalcy, our return is still nascent. But here's the good news. More than 150 million Americans are fully vaccinated. And while it's short of President Biden's target of vaccinating 70% of Americans by July 4th, our current 45% vaccination rate has meant workplaces, summer camps, and even entertainment venues are reopening. And this is because reports of COVID-19-related death or serious illness among the fully vaccinated are exceedingly rare. Now, here's the challenging news. Globally, the pandemic still rages. Brazil and India continue to battle steep increases in infections and deaths, and that's due in large part to highly contagious variants, including one called the Delta variant. Now, the Delta variant has spread to more than 90 countries. It's already becoming the dominant variant in places like India and the UK, and is on track to becoming the dominant strain here in the US, where it now makes up at least 20% of all new cases. Just yesterday, White House Chief Medical Advisor Dr. Anthony Fauci declared,
"The Delta variant is currently the greatest threat in the U.S. to our attempt to eliminate COVID-19.
And the World Health Organization is also warning that the Delta variant is, quote, fitter and faster than all previously identified variants.
This virus has the potential to be more lethal because it's more efficient in the way it transmits between humans, and it will eventually find those vulnerable individuals who will become severely ill, have to be hospitalized, and potentially die."
Now, that was Dr. Mike Ryan, executive director of the WHO's Health Emergencies Program, talking about the Delta variant at a news conference on Monday. Here to help us understand and to keep me from panicking is Dr. Bhakti Hansoti, an associate professor of emergency medicine and international health at Johns Hopkins University and Bloomberg School of Public Health. Dr. Hansoti, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, what should we make of the WHO's statements this week about the Delta variant being fastest and fittest of the coronavirus strains?
Well, it's a bizarrely worded statement, but it's not inaccurate. The Delta variant is the fittest and fastest, and I say that because it is much more transmissible than the previous Alpha variant and the original strain, twice as more transmissible. And we are seeing cases of more severe illness as well, with some unique features coming out of India, which has been suffering from the Delta variant since late 2020.
Let's talk a little bit about India and what is happening there. Help us to understand, is it a intersection of both the Delta variant and low vaccination rates? Is it about the Delta variant overcoming vaccination rates? What's going on that is causing such suffering in India?
So it's that plus a whole lot more. So first of all, the Delta variant is more virulent. In the original pandemic, we would see one or two members of a family get sick. The Delta variant, because it's so transmissible, like twice as infectious, whole families get wiped out, right? And it spreads through buildings like wildfire. The second is India has struggled with a healthcare system that was adequately able to prepare for the surge in COVID-19 cases. And what I mean is it has a fragmented health system with inadequate primary healthcare, emergency care, and critical care resources to manage all the patients that are getting sick. It also had a lack of oxygen supply. And the third is, yes, it was late to the vaccine party. India is undergoing a mass vaccination campaign using several different vaccine that are available. However, a significant proportion of its population is unvaccinated, and none of its population was vaccinated in late 2020 when the Delta variant first appeared.
Okay, so when you lay out those intersecting variables in that way, it makes me quite nervous about some realities right here in the U.S. We know that daily vaccinations right now are declining. We know that although certainly the U.S. overall has a public health system that is able to manage this, there certainly are, there's regions, you know, more rural areas, there are states and parts of the country where it seems that something like the Delta variant could quite swiftly overcome resources. Am I being alarmist?
You're not being completely alarmist, but there is a couple of considerations that hopefully will make you feel a little better. So the first is I look across at our neighbors in the United Kingdom. They have similar vaccination rates to us, with about 47% fully vaccinated, while we're about 45% fully vaccinated. Similar, like, you know, hotspots where there's significant declines in vaccines. And what has happened in the UK is that cases have doubled week by week. On the other hand, we haven't been hearing the same reports as we did in the original surges about the health system being overwhelmed, a lack of resources. So, you know, over this last year and a half, we have gleaned a lot of knowledge. We have adequate supply chains for PPE, for oxygen, for surge capacity for ICUs. As medical providers, we're better trained at managing COVID-19 patients. And that's because we've learned a lot of things about this virus and a lot of things that we should avoid doing. I think those that are most vulnerable in society, transplant patients, cancer patients, patients who can't mount an immune response, have already been vaccinated. And while the vaccine isn't 100%, it does decrease your likelihood of getting sick. And it also decreases your likelihood of being severely sick. And the other thing is, as a society, I think we're just more aware. Like, a lot of behaviors and practices have changed, perhaps forever.
So I heard you talking there about the most vulnerable, and it sounds very much like at the beginning of the pandemic, folks who have a set of pre-existing conditions, the elderly, those living in circumstances that are more crowded. Are there any aspects of the Delta variant that would create additional vulnerabilities for some populations who maybe haven't thought of themselves as particularly vulnerable to the COVID-19 virus?
So again, thinking about this idea of increased transmissibility and this phenomenon where we're seeing that the Delta variant infects whole households or whole buildings, I think, you know, individuals who are in housing that is clustered, so dormitories, homeless shelters, nursing homes, again, are the high-risk areas to watch. Individuals in low-income housing where, you know, families or multi-generational families are staying in one unit, unable to safely quarantine, that's the other area that I would watch.
So this weekend, my family took my father out to dinner for Father's Day. It was the first time that we had, as a family, been out to a restaurant, and my seven-year-old was with us. And as we walked into the restaurant, she looked up at me and said, Mom, when can kids get their vaccines? And it occurred to me, I mean, it's not that I hadn't noticed, but really in that moment, oh, all of us are feeling pretty confident in the family because the adults are all vaccinated. But here was my little person feeling very nervous about it. Should we be nervous at the Delta variant, given that children, the youngest children, simply aren't vaccinated, cannot be yet, that it might have an impact on kids that we haven't seen with the earlier variants?
So again, for the last 8 weeks, I've focused on the India COVID response. What I'm hearing from India is that there are pediatric cases, and we're getting a lot of requests to support pediatric ICU training for providers. Although that is not in the literature yet, but I think it is coming. I think kids will get vaccinated. I think we're about to see this in October and November. The Pfizer trials between the 5 to 12-year-olds are well under the way. And we haven't heard any concerning reports that the EUA approval of the vaccine will be delayed. I think shortly afterwards, children between the ages of 6 months and 5 years will be prioritized. And I'm really praying, because I have an 8-month-old and a 3-year-old, that my children be vaccinated by December. I think little people should be worried. If she can wear a mask, mm-hmm. that is what I would do. I think it's really difficult. And one of the reasons that I constantly wear a mask is I'm mirroring that behavior for my children, because we're just not out of the woods yet.
Oh, that's such helpful advice. I want to ask a somewhat maybe more theoretical question, but help me to understand, particularly if we go back to this fitter and faster, what is the goal of a virus? Now I know that it's not like sitting around working on its dissertation and thinking about its life plans, but I can remember if someone fairly, right, if only, right, just pause for a little while. I'm wondering, is the goal of a virus to become more deadly, or is it to become actually less deadly so that it can go hang out in its host but not cause the mortality? Or is it simply that viruses don't operate in the way that I'm currently thinking about it?
So I think an individual virus doesn't, but the way that survival works, their ultimate goal, like humans, is to survive. And for successful survival, that means different things. To survive and to become a virulent strain, a virus needs to be more infectious, needs to last longer in the host. And so by being really deadly, the host may die, and so you're less likely to pass it on to the next person. So a more virulent strain will have perhaps a longer duration of illness and maybe slightly milder, and that way it is a higher likelihood of survival. But this is all about survival. So these mutations occur by chance. Some mutations make viruses weaker, some make them stronger. The stronger mutations rise because they're more likely to survive, and then you get a new strain.
So I want to go back one more time to this mirroring and the masking. Would you have policy-based suggestions, given that, you know, in 2 months, schools will begin to reopen in many parts of the country? Many of us are going on summer vacation this year because we didn't before. So yes, individual families making the choice to mask, but should we be sort of maintaining masking policies at a more public health level?
I think so. And while I do agree that we cannot go back to the lockdown, the shutdown that we had at the start of the pandemic, because it has consequences, both for our mental health and financial consequences, but also societal consequences. My child is a little scared of other people that she doesn't know. And she wasn't like that when she was born. I do think as a society, though, we have to change the way we think about this, that masking, which is low cost, easy to do, easily available, should be something that is common practice when you do not know what the vaccination status of an individual is that you're meeting.
What keeps you hopeful?
Keeps me hopeful that we have innovated, right? I never thought in my day I would see this much development in the vaccine world, that we could rapidly roll out a vaccine to a modern pandemic threat. And hopefully we've learned some really important lessons about a healthcare system that makes sense to respond to future threats.
Dr. Bhakti Hansoti is an associate professor of emergency medicine and international health at Johns Hopkins University and Bloomberg School of Public Health. Doctor, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, our team has been reporting high-quality news about science, technology, and medicine. News you won't get anywhere else. And now that political news is 24/7, our audience is turning to us to know about the really important stuff in their lives. Cancer, climate change, genetic engineering, childhood diseases. Our sponsors know the value of science and health news. For more sponsorship information, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.